Our guest for today is Denis Kalishkin. He's a principal at I2BF Global DC. And welcome, Denis.
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me today. To be precise, it's I2BF Global Ventures.
Tell us a bit more about you, your personal background.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I'm a rocket scientist by education, and if any of you love space, I have a separate story. I'll tell you later on about space and space-related stuff. When I graduated, I was thinking, how could I make money when I work? And I decided that I will deal somehow with technologies. And back then, it wasn't popular. Venture capital was not that popular as it's today. And I learned at one of the events about the concept. I got curious, and it's understood that this is a perfect fit for me, because on one hand, I can understand very sophisticated stuff, and on the other hand, it's finances, and it's very you can use technologies which are already or soon to be on the market, and build businesses on that. So that's how I ended up in venture capital, and in I2BF particularly. And the cool story about me joining I2BF: first of all, I applied twice. The first time I wasn't accepted, and I applied again in a year and a half, and the second time was successful, and I'm already 9 years with the fund. And one of the reasons I joined I2BF is their investment in the company Planetary Resources. They were mining asteroids. We're going to mine asteroids and raise investments from Larry Page and Richard Branson. And back then, I was working in. It didn't play out that well as we thought initially. The company was acquired, but actually, it was the first company of that sort in 2013. So they were the pioneers. And they, to be honest, I believe were early to the market. And if they were doing it now, it would be more interesting and successful. But anyway, they had a strong founder. The company got acquired, and they made a difference. For example, in Luxembourg, so far as I know, there was a regulation put in place about mining minerals and asteroids and beyond the Earth. So I believe that was a really good investment anyway. And more importantly, from my personal perspective, I became a venture capitalist partially because of that investment as well, and joined I2BF.
What do you think of the VC career in general? And could the meaningful experience in VC help you to build the startup in the future?
So first of all, I have experience of coaching and mentoring people who would like to start career in VC. I have also a course on venture capital. From what I've seen, there are different people which would like to start career in VC. Some of them are young people. Some of them are career shifters around 30 years old, and there are various reasons why people would like to join VC, but 80% of those people shouldn't, because on one hand, yes, you will see a lot of companies, you will learn anything about the process of fundraising, you will see how those companies progress. But many don't understand that venture capital is a private equity fund, actually. So you're an investor. You're not an operator. You're not building business yourself. Yes, you participate in boards. Yes, you do meaningful introductions to companies and other stuff. But the skill set you will acquire will be a little bit different from what you need to run your own company. And having said that, yes, some of the VCs, they switch to the other side and join startups or launch their startups. But I believe you need a bit different skill set to do that. If you want to start working in VC because you want to launch your startup, it's not the best way to do that. If your aim is to launch a startup or work it for startup, you'd better go after product manager, project manager. If you're a tech guy, you'd focus on machine learning or other tech professions to become a CTO. Or you can join startup, any startup at junior positions, or maybe working in big IT companies or like advanced corporations where you can acquire business knowledge and some business skills, which are the better fit for building your own business.
As I know, you are already like 9 years in I2PF Global Ventures, and that's like the whole fun cycle. What do you think of that long-term commitment? Like one GP of the huge global funds told me that if you want to work in VC, I consider 10 years working in that team, in that space. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, VC is a long-term game. Just because it will take you like 5 to 10 years to see the results what you've done, and and you also oftentimes you start as a junior analyst and you need some time to become a professional. So it can take you like 5 years or so to become, I don't know, investment director, getting meaningful results of your work. So I'd say that at least 5 years is the time you would spend with a single team. Of course, there are like career shifters, and there are people who go from VC to VC, but generally people work longer. And, before applying to venture capital, I was applying to consulting companies. And there is a notion that I will work in a consulting company for a couple of years, and then I join some of my clients I worked for and become industry expert. So it's different in venture capital. So in venture capital, it typically takes time. I'd say 5 years minimum to get meaningful results.
Okay.
And those who spend a few, like 1 or 2 years, they were tourists in the sector. I'd say so. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be there in the first place. And this is the reason I persuade 80% of the people not to take this career path.
What was your entry position at I2PF?
It was an analyst, I wasn't an intern. Just because prior to joining I2BF, I had experience working in a bank. I had experience of launching and failing my startup, and I had experience I had a financial degree as well, on top of my technology degree, and I had like intensive courses in venture capital. So it was a little bit more easy for me than for a general person on the market to start a career in VC.
And how's
but that... actually, I'm not sure if I could get a job now myself if I would start in position today.
How's the promotion process going in venture funds, going from analyst to principal at the firm?
I believe it varies from VC to VC, but generally, when you're a junior position professional, it's hard to measure your results just because
yep.
you're doing the investment directors or partners are bringing the deals, and you help to execute them. So at the junior positions, your promotion is more about your proactive actions and how you act, what you do, and is your senior manager sees in you like sees a professional in you and would like to continue working with you. Because the other you can't yes, you can go after and find some deals on the market, but typically they wouldn't be of high quality. And the only there is no way to measure your results, the results of your work. So at the earlier stages, it's more about your proactive position, how you think, how are you curious enough, are you supportive to your senior team members in what they're doing. Yeah. And speaking of how long does it take to get a position, it can also vary, but I'd say like in general there are maybe 3 year periods when you move from stage to stage. So to be honest, when I worked for like the first year in VC, I now I understand that I understood nothing. Like I was just doing the job, and then you starts slowly acquire and understand something. Acquire skill and understand something.
Okay, got it. Let's talk about your side project and Ask VC. I believe that like it's totally non-commercial project, right?
It's actually a pet project I started even before pandemic, before it was a mainstream.
What's
And
the mission
first
behind Ask VC?
yeah
Like,
yeah so speaking of the mission, one thing that like there was an unfortunate event in my life. My mom died of cancer, and it was the moment I was thinking how that I will die once myself and what I will be thinking at the last moment of my life. And I understood that you should do something meaningful. You wouldn't think about the IRR you earned or something like that. So I was and I understood that so like dealing with entrepreneurs is a good mission because these are the people who are changing the world and rebuilding the economics. And they are not only changing the world, they also give job to people, give good tools for some underrepresented audiences, and make people happier. So I understood that maybe my mission is to help those people to be more successful. And when I was talking to entrepreneurs, I oftentimes see that they get a lot of frustration during the fundraising process and all the stuff around it, just for one reason. They are doing it for the first time. They may be very clever, ambitious, but they are doing it for the first time. And they need to learn many stuff about fundraising, about talking to VCs, how to pitch, and how to put together a data room, a lot of stuff around legal issues. So it's hard to acquire this information in a short period of time, and it was wasn't that concentrated previously. And oftentimes what I saw VCs were not straightforward giving an honest feedback on what they've heard, just because the VCs would like to keep good relations just in case it plays out with the startup and have an opportunity to invest. So I decided that I would try to bring a little bit of transparency, and I started Ask VC. So initially it was just a feedback sessions, one-on-one meetings or small group meetings. Then I understood that I need to give lectures on basic stuff on how to assess the market size, to put together a presentation and other stuff. And I decided, like, I always act this way. If I can do something, let's do something. And it cost me like $100 to launch of this project. And I talked to various ecosystem builders who would like to host some events on their and their co-workings, and started giving lectures, started meeting with startups. And it started all as a hobby. Then COVID happened, and I did more than 70 webinars, both on local languages and in English. And I was not only doing the lectures myself, but I also was hosting various speakers, entrepreneurs, professionals in various industries, applied topics like sales, marketing, fundraising, hiring people, firing people, managing people. This is what I've done so far in the project. And I also run a few courses, one of them on fundraising, another is how to become a venture analyst, and mentor people. So that's what I do, and I actually do some local offline events in various countries, because you know, of course, in Silicon Valley you have a lot of networking, a lot of events. But when it comes to other countries, for example, in Latin America or Southeast Asia, sometimes they are lagging behind. Not all the cities, not all the countries, but sometimes they are lagging behind and trying to fill in the gap. So, yes, that's pretty it for this SQC project.
As I know, you are doing some of the internships for the VC analysts. Am I right?
Yeah, we have this practice of doing internships. So it's typically a remote part-time internship. We don't pay for it.
Is that the internship at the I2BF or just under your...
We have two options. Sometimes we take people as interns to I2BF, but we take maybe one or two people every half a year, they should commit like 3 to 6 months to work at least 20 hours a week. What people do is they participate in meetings, help out with drafting documents, and doing actually the job of junior analyst. And there is also another option, which I do as a part of Ask VC, when people help me out with researches of the market, I'm personally interested in, and topics I'm personally interested in. And so I do a little bit of coaching. Here I take people who could grant at least 10 hours a week. The final is bigger there, just because I'm more flexible do a little less coaching than when it comes to entrepreneurship at I2BF.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move forward. The thing that I'm really into for the last year, I think, it's the concept of the data-driven VC and the use of AI in venture capital. Do you believe that these analysts, associates, they might be replaced by some kind of algorithms or the language models in the future?
To be honest, I've been asking myself these questions since 2018, because I also participated in some courses on machine learning, and understand actually that I can do this stuff myself, but it takes a lot of time to acquire the skill set, I don't believe we can replace totally the human here, for several reasons. First of all, because when you make a decision, there is always lack of information, and when we talk about traditional statistical machine learning, you just need quite big data sets data sets, and startups are different one from another. So if you're dealing with big numbers in big data in bank, then those algorithms are working more reliable. And I've read more than 60 articles about how to use various approaches for venture capital. What I understood is the other problem you will face is that you're dealing with a very long-term investments. Like if you're making a deal, it's typically maybe 10 years. You will be holding position in it for 5 to 10 years. And when I talked to a few professionals in the data space, and they mentioned that such time series of 10 years plus, the algorithms wouldn't be accurate enough. But having said that, it doesn't mean that you can't use machine learning for different steps of the process. First of all, companies now leave many digital footprints when they do their operations. So many VCs, including us, are already doing basic scraping from LinkedIn, Crunchbase, other databases, and do sort of clustering analysis and identifying the growing companies. So this is actually one of the reasons you should keep your LinkedIn profile up to date, because it's an entry point for all of those scrappers. And think of listing your startup in various startup databases like Crunchbase, Brace, PitchBook, and others, just as a marketing tool, like B2B companies which are doing sales, they are using Captera or G2 just to promote their product. So the same is with keeping up to date your descriptions, your LinkedIn profile, your profile at various resources. It just generates you an incoming traffic of potential investors which are looking and tracking startups. We also play around ChatGPT, so I'm pretty sure it will be better sooner. It's a good tool for searching information, for preparing investment memos. But having said that, you should also keep in mind that it sometimes tells bullshit. So you need to make fact checking. But this is the tool you could use. One of the things which is happening on the market, so traditionally around 70% of the deal flow is coming from the network, from warm introductions. This is the current state of the market. I've seen in one of the articles, I've seen like a projection that this will be like 5 years from now, 70% of the pipeline will be coming through cold contacting, and I believe we see will be more we will be acquiring and building this traditional B2B sales process. It's already happening when like junior professionals in VC just reach out and talk to startups and actually qualify the lead. This is speaking of the terms we use in B2B sales, like these are just SDRs, just reaching out, learning a little bit about the company, qualifying the leads, and understanding if they need to take their senior professional on the call or not. So I believe a lot of automation, a lot of machine learning will be around optimizing this friction, in the current process. But they won't displace this place junior analysts at all. And the other thing I would also stress is I believe that in the long run, the venture capital and the deals the VCs are going after will also change, because now many VCs invest in B2B software. And if you talk to VCs, they say, okay, we're looking at the companies which are growing 15 to 20 or 10 to 15% month over month, and some basic numbers. So when I hear this, this is just like the rule-based decision making. It means that any can do that, not any, but many can do that, and it means that there is a room for some automation. And since many can do investments like that, the returns, the competition will grow, and the valuations will grow, and the returns will be leaving the sector. So I'm pretty sure that the deals we are doing now, and the sectors we're going after, will be different 5 years from now. Where but
you mean that the VCs must consider more of the deep tech?
Not only deep tech, I would say so.
Systems.
Venture capital is about taking risks and is about making non-obvious decisions. And if you're just starting your journey in venture capital, I would strongly advise you to read Bessemer investment memos. They have it on their website. How they made the decisions betting on various companies. And if you read a memo of Twitch, like it was like very unstandard deal, and it wasn't a rule based deal as you typically see when you invest in B2B SaaS, for example. So what I'm saying is that in the future, venture capital will be doing deals where this. There is a big there is a big uncertainty, and it's not easy to make a decision. And yet, yes, I believe that we will see more deep tech deals, just because you don't only need here to assess the numbers, but understand what's happening in the sector, what's different about the technology. So. These are the types of the deals which are not easily done by many people, and this is if you need a specific skill set to make some deals, it means that you have a natural barrier to entry for general VC from the market, and higher barriers to entry, and VCs know that, mean higher returns. This is the same question we ask startups. What is the barrier to entry and how you're different? And it's important, just because if there is a barrier, then like you can charge a premium for whatever you do. So the same applies to VCs as well.
Yep. Oh, okay. Let's finish the VC part. Let's move to the more interesting part of the conversation. I know that you are really passionate about the space technologies, the space exploration. Why is that?
You know, the first of all, it's as I learned from my friends, it's genetically so. So some people are just more passionate about space than others. Like others people, for example, are more passionate about medicine or machine learning or something else. So it's as I said, it's genetically so. I've loved space since I remember myself. So since 5 years old or so, something I was. Watching cartoons about transformers, fancy robots flying in space, and I loved the idea. And when I was a kid, there was a perception that Like it's so easy to travel from planet to planet, like as if like you grab a bus and go from a city to city. And later on, when I grew older, I understood that it's not the case now. And then I had a master's degree in aerospace engineering and learned even more about the topic. And then I was a little bit disappointed because back when I was graduating, it was prior to new space era when startups and Elon Musk were doing amazing stuff in aerospace. So I decided to look for another occupation. But I have always been like, dreaming about it and watching films and reading books and getting inspiration from science fiction on the topic. And when COVID hit, it was actually an aha moment for many people. People were thinking like, I can die someday or tomorrow, for example, from a disease. And maybe I should do something what is meaningful. And I've seen some family offices which decided to invest in medicine for this particular reason, just because they were saying like, I have money, but I can't leave my house just because we don't have a vaccine. So maybe I should do my part and contribute to dealing with this and with other issues. The same was with me. I started to think during pandemics, there is a passion about space, so what could I do? And the easiest thing I could do is to do a research. I had those interns and ask them to make a research on what are the types of the deals which are done in aerospace, how does the sector look like. And I had one of the interns, he was actually a rocket scientist, so it was easier for him to do that. Thanks, Nick, for an amazing job. And the other thing I did is I did a couple of webinars hosting a space entrepreneur and talking about this sector overview. And one of the things I stumbled upon is the question of the rocket engines and how we fly to space. And what I learned is that almost all of the engines we have use jet propulsion. Jet propulsion is very inefficient technology in terms of how we will be traveling to space in 100 years or several hundred years. Yes, we will be using it, but I believe that we will need a new principle. And then I started to ask questions. So what are the new principles which are available on the market, or like in physics in general? And there are none, almost none. And then I started to dig deeper in the physics. And when I was a student, we were talking about quarks and about and that it was the state of the art. I also heard about string theory, heard about dark matter. So I decided to learn what's happened for the last almost 20 years since I graduated. And there was like the results, the achievements were lower than I thought. And I was a little bit disappointed about it. And I decided what could I do? So on one side, it's all about passion, and it's all about like taking some actions. And on the other side, I decided I also saw that many, many, many more and more people became more interested and curious about topic. And I have a friend who was a partner in a VC, and then he pinged me and say, "Dennis, I know you invested in space tech. At some point, I would like to go after this sector." Then I told him about like rockets that fall and regulation and all the stuff. And then he said, "No, I'm doing it anyway." And this inspired me, and I started to think, what could I do? And the easiest thing I was which came to my mind is to do something on the convergence of venture capital businesses and space technologies. And the easiest thing I could do is to start a blog and where we can cover niche topics. And we started it 8 months ago called Space Ambition. I'll leave the link in the I'll give you the link to it. And the idea is just to cover niche topics, about what's happening in space, putting it in plain English, 5 to 7 minute reads, one article a week. I gathered a team of almost 20 people helping out me with that. So if you're passionate about space, reach out to me. I'm taking volunteers on that. And we have rocket scientists, have scientists, have VCs, which are doing researches on the niche topics, talk to industry experts, and distill it to small articles, which like many can understand, can process. And we show both state of the market, you know, prominent startups, existing players, VCs, taking also interviews from people from the sector. And there are a few ideas. The first one is inspire others to go after the sector, because if you want to transform something, you need more you know, proactive, more passionate, more clever people doing it. The other thing is share information about what's already happening, just to save some time for people to make their own research and decide what to go after. And also to give the tools to those entrepreneurs who are going after that, or to VCs who for some reason decide to invest in the sector. And just today I talked to one of the VCs, asked him if the guy loves making investment, loves space. And he said, yeah, but like space is very pricey. And guess what? Not all the business models and not all the deals which are done in the aerospace sector are about hardware or are that costly. For example, I know the guy who is doing a marketplace for satellite imaging applications. It's just B2B SaaS, but it happens to use satellite imaging, Earth observation. So there are more business models, more lightweight business models, which require fewer capital. So, and they don't, typically they, you can find the deals where you could even fit in your existing mandate. If you're a venture capital, for example, if you are after ESG topic, there are satellite imaging companies for ESG purposes, just using third-party data and providing insights on those data. So if you're passionate about space, you can do it, like start doing it right away. So this was the idea, the initial idea. We started, we did more than 30 articles, you can read them. And then of course, startups started to reach out to us and asking for help. So we started helping some startups with applying to top accelerators, sometimes, and you know, startups always ask you about funding. And of course, we do some introductions to the VCs and build the relationships with all the VCs in the aerospace sector. Startups always reach out to you asking to help them with fundraising, and you end up helping them in a number of stuff, because you need sometimes pivot. You need sometimes hire someone or talk to professional. So that's what we've done so far with Space Ambition. If you would like to contribute somehow, just reach me out via email or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to talk. And one call to action is, like, regardless what's your profession, regardless where you live, if you have a passion to something, I have a passion to space, but you can have a passion to something else, just go after it. Be proactive, and I'm pretty sure that you can succeed in what you really love. Yeah.
Yeah, that's much bigger than I thought about the Space Ambition. Me personally, I read the Space Ambition from day one. And
oh, cool.
There's a lot of different topics involved, like moon base, space manufacturing, asteroids mining. What the? I already got it that you are really into the rocket engines, jet propulsions. What the other exciting thing about the space you're really interested in? That might be a bit not
Yeah,
the.
so we're actually are looking into all niches. For example, this week we are publishing an article about what is pharma doing in aerospace, in space. Like all many established pharma companies, they're launching experiments on running experiments on ISS, and we're delving deeper into the topic and talking about it. And there are startups actually which are raising money for that. Then there is a niche of IoT and space internet. There is a niche of Earth observation, pretty interesting, I believe, because for the last couple of years, Earth observation data were intensely used for set of solutions, not only pharma, or sorry, not only for agra, but also for example, when there was a tanker in Suez Canal stuck, or traders use information about a movement of oil tankers and trying to assess how it will affect on the market pricing, and stuff like that. So Earth observation is pretty interesting topic. We've done a couple of articles on that, I believe that you can find more interesting stuff there. And of course, there are if you talk about the hardware, the there are in orbit transportation companies. Maneuvering satellites and deorbiting satellites startups, and I believe like there will be more, even more ideas tested in tested and applied in space than we can imagine right now. At some point, it will become like a it's already a separate industry. It's more than 30. 5 billion, $350 billion industry, I believe even more companies will be doing something in space. For example, 20 years or 30 years from now, ore mining companies, they wouldn't be mining only on Earth. They will be have a separate departments mining something in the asteroid belt. Or if you're a telecom company, you will mostly, I'm pretty sure you will be having some telecom satellite business or something related to that, just to expand. And it wouldn't become, it at some point, it will become just mandatory. Like now you're doing, you have a website. 20 years back, very few companies had that website. And the same will be with space. And what also I strongly encourage you to consider is that space technologies is not only about space applications. We even put together an article about technologies which NASA commercialized on Earth. And you would be surprised how many inventions we use in our everyday life, we were initially invented for space. So if you look at the space startups and space technologies this way, then you can apply some technology in space, but also have a much broader sector on Earth, solving real problems here. And and this is the way you can build a huge business. Like the last piece of information is that I believe that space tech, since it's a multidisciplinary sector, will affect many sectors. And it's hard to develop some technologies which are used in space. But humanity moves forward when it comes across some challenges. And dealing with space-related topics is a huge challenge, but this gives you a huge amount of data, both like from the perspective of fundamental physics, how this universe works, and there is James Webb Telescope, which is gathering a lot of data and giving some controversial results already. And from engineering perspective as well, for example, I don't know, solar panels or digital cameras. They have their push for first were developed for satellites, just because there wasn't other way to, you know, to provide energy or to deal with satellite with imaging. Yeah, so this is the reasons I'm pretty curious about topic. Yeah, and how I hope I inspired at least some of you to look into it.
Yep, 100%. Is there the other sector in the deep tech space that you're curious about?
I've looked into many startups in quantum computing. Yeah, it's there was a, and there is still a hype around it, and a lot of uncertainties. Everything related. So, I'm not a big fan of new materials and energy storage. Not because it's not important topic, but just because I don't like to read about it. Like I'm not get excited about reading about new nanotechnology material, but these are the very important sectors, and there will be many innovations here, as well as the quite a big sector, and one of the one of the sectors which attracts a lot of attention is pharma and bio. And Andreessen Horowitz launched even the podcast called "Bio Eats the World." So, yeah, pretty interesting. Could listen to them. They host. They also cover various topics. They also host various scientists which are talking about their inventions and how to put them into practice. So, if you're onto this topic, just highly recommend to listen to those guys.
So you're not really into the energy sector, am I right? Why I'm asking that?
We traditionally invested, as HBF, we traditionally invested in our energy sector.
There's the one deal in the HBF portfolio, General Fusion, that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Did you manage the deal or some other?
No, I wasn't in charge of the deal. Yeah, but it's a very like nuclear fusion. It's a very inspiring story for me as a scientist, as a physicist. Yeah, we shall see how it plays. But the ITBF had a long story, talking with the team. So we tracked them for a few years before we made the deal. So deep tech takes time. You need to keep that in mind. Yeah, but this is something inspiring you could do in your life.
Do you believe that the nuclear fusion is the VC type of deal?
I don't know, but more than 30 deals are already done by VCs. So you never know. Just go and experiment. It's always, VCs always do invest startups in their first waves of investments. Sometimes they play out well, sometimes they a disaster. And if you look at clean tech sector, it was actually a disaster for many VCs. Kleiner Perkins, as far as I know, like suffered heavily from investments in clean tech of the previous wave of clean tech. But now you see that solar panels are more widely spread. So And sometimes investments work play out pretty well in the first wave, in the first place. So we shall see if it's a perfect time or not for nuclear energy. But the timing is here for all sorts of energy storage and energy generation, alternative energy generation. And we shall see what will be what will work. And actually, this is what we see should do. I mean, like, you need to experiment on the business models, on technology. So need like to invest in something to test if it's a good fit for market, and then like either to like invest in another company or like look for other alternatives.
Okay, based on our great conversation, what's your content diet?
VC's getting a lot of content. So at some point I was subscribed to all of the newsletters. So for top startup databases like Crunchbase, PitchBook, and others. And then at some point I decided like the too much information for me. So I unsubscribed from all of them. Except for Crunchbase, so I just get the news and like get the pulse of the market. Then I read the like specific blogs or specific resources which are focused on, like if you're focused on the B2B SaaS, you read on B2B SaaS. Considering space tech, I actually don't read much. I don't like there are channels which are talking about like Elon Musk launching yet another rocket, like showing it live. I'm not that type of the person, but I have a privilege of putting together a team of people who are processing for information for me and distilling it for me and for others, and just re reading this distilled information. But you should prioritize, and first of all, you should probably focus on some niches, and this is one of the things I advise to young venture analysts. So if you're starting to or you would like to get to a profession, just pick maybe a single sector or a couple of sectors which are you're passionate about and you believe that that's the future, and start reading maybe the influencers, the specific blogs or something, talking to people in the sector just to acquire information. And of course, VCs not only get information from reading it in newsletters or other public sources, they also gather information talking to startups which are doing this tech and acquiring this type of information and somehow processing it and making their minds on some of the topics.
What
And yeah, and the last thing, I also read books. Not all, not like some. I know that some of my colleagues they read like I know 50 books a year, or like some brag they read 100 books a year. Personally, myself, I believe that you'd better read fewer books, but do it more carefully. I prefer to read books which are like highly recommended by someone, and I prefer to make note takings, so making summaries, and I publish them occasionally on Ask VC, so that others could save some time reading the whole book or getting some ideas from the book and go after and read the whole book if they decide that it's what is relevant for them. Because founders, they're very limited in time and they have a lot of things on their plate. And spending time reading a book is like very big effort for them, typically.
Yeah, me personally, I'm really struggling to read the book in the era of blogs, articles, newsletters, and especially business-related books. Do you have like some recommendation of the book that you might read and not be bored.
Yeah, okay.
It might be
Business
not,
books typically.
no, it might be not related to business, to tech, might be something like just the human stuff.
So like I am very back a very big fan of Isaac Asimov, so
Yeah.
read my maybe 20 books or
Science
something,
fiction.
science fiction. I also read some classical books. Yeah, but like it's, you know, the tastes are different. I wouldn't highly recommend this book or another book. Yeah, and speaking of the business books, yes, they are. Most of them are boring, but if you focus on like getting some insights and processing information, so it's not just like reading and forgetting, then it could be really curious. I'm reading currently a book about the history of capitalism, how it developed, and pretty interesting insights and pretty interesting. Pretty interesting book.
What's the name of the book?
I'll send you the link
Okay.
after all.
To finish our conversation, can you give the advice not for the young VC analyst, but in general for the young people? Because in one of your latest blogs, you said the thing that focus on the most meaningful things. Am I right? Yeah.
Yeah, so what I really believe is that first of all, if you're doing something which you believe is very meaningful, which you believe is your personal mission, then you could do it like you will do it more efficiently just because you understand why you're doing it, not because only because of the money. And if you pick something which you believe meaningful, then look for the sector and the position, given your skill set and given your like, given your you know what you're good at, to become successful in this sector. And I have an exercise. I have some people on the mentoring. I give them a list of almost 200 subsectors, subsegments venture capitalists are investing in, and say, okay, give them like a score from 1 to 10, if you like it or hate it, and then we look at this list, and you oftentimes like see 2, 3 sectors, subsectors which are, you know, people are passionate about, and then go after those sectors, because since VCs are investing in them, it means that there are at least some business models which are could be lucrative and interesting, and you can find your business model, because disruption happens all the time, and there are many technologies which are coming to the market at the moment, and you just need to identify the right trends which are moving the market and operate in the market in which you're personally passionate about. So I would act that way.
So you don't believe in the headlines saying that generalists are better than specialists?
That's a tricky one. So if you look, I even read an article about that, a scientific article. So people from US, they looked at the performance of venture capital funds, and yes, if you look at those funds which are generalists, they generally get a better performance. But if you look closely at the teams of those funds, they typically have several
Specialist.
people focused on some subsectors. Because if you are purely generalist fund, you just make a decision more or less blindly. And you just put money in. And for example, Bessemer invested in Rocket Lab. I'm not sure that when they were making this deal, they had a lot of expertise in aerospace. They I'm sure that they took some advisor or friends they knew personally knew, and they asked some like the personal opinions and made decisions based on that. But if you're not a professional or something, it's hard to make tough decisions, like informed tough decisions. So when we talk about generalist fund, the funds which perform well, first of all, they have strong brands, and the other is they typically have people in their teams which are focused on some sub niches. And even from the founder perspective, when we talk to a partner who is focused on something, it's the conversation is going smoother, because you're not talking about the numbers, you're talking about the industry specific, you're talking about the people he or she personally knows and could refer to you. So if you talk about from professional perspective, you'd better focus on something, because you spend some time to better understand something and make decision, more informed decisions, and this drives the performance. When we talk about generalists fund, they perform generalist funds perform better just because you have investments in various buckets. So if one of the sectors goes down, and of course your portfolio will go down along with the sector, you have other sectors which will drive the performance. Yeah. So this is why everyone likes to be generalists, but not because you don't need this deeper understanding of the sector.
All right, Denis. I think we did a solid episode for our podcast. Thanks for doing this. Great conversation. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. I hope that it's useful for you. And we will post all the links of the Denis course, his project AskVC, his newsletter Space Ambition in the notes. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Denis.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.